Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to this episode of Who's Counting. This is a podcast about all things elections, how elections are supposed to be run, and how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And today, we are very fortunate to have with us a woman from Alaska, Kelly Chewbacca, who is the president and CEO of Preserve Democracy in Alaska. And Kelly, thanks so much for joining us all the way from Alaska.
I'm so happy to be with you, Cleta. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Kelly, let's start with talking a little bit about you. Many of us may have heard of you as the nominee, the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in Alaska in 2022. But talk a little bit about your background before you were a U.S. Senate candidate, and then we'll go right into talking about that U.S. Senate campaign.
Well, immediately before running for U.S. Senate, I served in Governor Dunleavy's cabinet as the commissioner for the Department of Administration. I was responsible for running all of the logistics and operations for the state of Alaska, everything from personnel and IT, procurement and facilities, to the Public Defender Agency and the DMV. You name it, and it gets thrown into the Department of Administration. But before that, I started my career as a Department of Justice, working as the Special Assistant for the Inspector General. That began my career in oversight and waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government. I went to help start the Director of the National Intelligence, serving as the General Counsel in the Inspector General's office there, and then moved on to the Civil Liberties and Privacy Office for the DNI, and became the Acting Inspector General at the Federal Trade Commission, and then joined the U.S. Postal Service Inspector General's office, where I was the Chief Data Officer running the data analytics team, helping to fight waste, fraud, and abuse at the Postal Service. And that's when I moved back home to the state of Alaska. I'm actually born and raised here, and helped to serve in the governor's administration before running for U.S. Senate.
Well, that is a quite impressive resume and background, Kelly. That is really quite amazing. I could spend a whole podcast asking you about some of those things that you were involved in those inspector general's offices and what you found. Oh, my gosh. So then you decide to run for the United States Senate. And most people would say that's pretty straightforward. You file and you run against the people, other Republicans who want to run, and the Democrats run in a primary and run against and there's a winner of the Democratic primary and the winner of a Republican primary, and then those two square off in November. And that isn't quite what happened in Alaska in 2022, is it?
That's correct. This was our first ranked choice voting election in 2022. And remember, I believe we will be the smallest state of all the states that are experimenting with ranked choice voting. We will have the smallest electorate population in Alaska. One of the candidates who ran in the U.S. Senate race was a California actress who moved to Alaska and took on a fake name and a fake Alaskan identity to try to become a U.S. senator. And she was exposed just before the primary, but could have made it onto the general election ballot without being exposed. That was one of the dangers, obviously, in this kind of an election, because there is no screening or vetting of candidates. The parties are not allowed to be involved. They're not allowed to have a say, if you will, in who gets to move forward. Instead, it's just a free-for-all. So those 19 candidates got to run for U.S. Senate, and everybody in the state gets to vote for them. So most of the Republicans voted for me, and I moved forward into the top four. About 10% of the Democrats voted for the Democrat candidate, and most of the Democrats voted for Lisa Murkowski, and that's how she made it into the top four. And so four candidates moved forward, and that was our general election ballot, and then you get to ranked choice. What happens in ranked choice is on the final election, all of the voters who come to the election get the opportunity to rank candidates in the order of preference, or they don't have to rank candidates in the order of preference. You get to choose what you want to do. If you color in your ballot wrong, it's kind of like a multiple choice ballot like you would do in tests in high school. And if you rank your ballot wrong, then your ballot gets thrown out. And so what they call exhausted ballots or misapplied ballots, and so they get thrown out of the election. And so after that whole process, the candidates that come in third place and fourth place, they're the ones who drop off, and their second, third, and fourth place votes get reallocated and distributed to the top two candidates. And in the end, the candidate with whoever has the most votes wins in the end. And so in the end, Senator Murkowski ended up having the most votes. And so now she's our reelected senator.
So let's go back here. Tell everybody how ranked choice voting came to be the system that was used in Alaska in 2022, because it doesn't sound like something that conservatives would ever want to support. And you've historically had a relatively conservative legislature, but what happened?
Well, Clete, I think it's important to realize in Alaska, the majority of people in Alaska do lean Republican. They lean to the right of center, and that's still the case today, even though our elected representatives at this point lean left, both at the federal level and at the state level. We have more Democrats representing us, or people who lean to the left, than Republicans. So in 2020, a ballot initiative was run to implement ranked choice, but the people who ran it said that we were getting rid of dark money in the state of Alaska. They did not advertise it truthfully and say that this was bringing in ranked choice. They said that we'd be getting rid of dark money. And so the initiative passed with only about 4,000 votes as a majority. What happened in 2021 is it was actually disclosed in undercover videos from Project Veritas that the people who ran the ballot initiative were all Lisa Murkowski's campaign staffers. And they ran the ballot initiative solely for the purpose of getting Lisa Murkowski reelected. They understood and knew that if you had a traditional election process with a primary where Republicans got to vote on who their candidate would be, Lisa Murkowski does not have a chance of getting reelected in Alaska. So in order to get her reelected and preserve her incumbency, they re-engineered our entire election system to work around the will of the voters so that she could get reelected and hold on to her 21-year Senate seat. And so that was the only reason why ballot measure 2 was put into place, and the reason why they deceived Alaskan voters to make it something that it wasn't. I can't even tell you how many times on the campaign trail I heard people say, I don't remember voting for this. Why did we ever put ranked choice voting in place? And it's because they didn't. They voted to get rid of dark money. But now we have this ranked choice voting system that was very confusing and very discouraging to a lot of Alaskan voters.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there is a very well-funded leftist organization nationwide, and they create all these other little entities all over the country. And they've got buckets of money, and it really is, they're putting it in place in as many places as they can, because it really does impact, and I think it disadvantages conservatives. It's a way to try to keep conservatives from being successful. But so Alaska, just so everybody understands, so Alaska went from having just a traditional closed primary, only Republicans can vote, and they pick the Republican nominee, and the Democrats pick the Democratic nominee, and if they're libertarians, they pick theirs, and then those go to the general election, and then people choose. And that isn't what happened in Alaska in 2022.
That's correct. Our primary system was what we called a plurality system, our election system. And our primary system was open to Republicans and undeclareds and independents. So the Republicans had decided to make it a fairly open system. But now with this new ballot measure in place, anybody can vote on who gets to be the Republicans on the general election ballot. And interestingly, this violates a 2000 U.S. Supreme Court case, Democrat Party of California versus Jones, which said that the First Amendment right of a political party, a fundamental right of the United States of America, is political parties, Republicans, Democrats, the Green Party, the Constitution Party, the Libertarians, they get to pick who their candidate is on the final ballot, not just any voter in the state, mm-hmm. because it is absolutely the right of the party to determine who their candidate is. It's going to represent their policies and their platforms and their ideals and push forward their agenda at a national level. And a state cannot just come in and change that process of deciding who the candidate is that's going to represent the party. It is a fundamental right of assembly and the First Amendment for parties to decide who their candidates are. And so they got rid of a blanket primary process that was put forward by California in 2000 saying you can't do that. I think that this system violates that U.S. Supreme Court case by saying that the Democrats got to put forward who the Republican Party nominee is. Now, who's sitting in the U.S. Senate pretending to represent the Republicans of Alaska when, in fact, the Republicans of Alaska censured Murkowski, said she is not allowed to call herself a Republican, and in the end, removed her from membership in our party during this past election cycle. And yet she's the person who now has gone forward and claims to represent us, when in fact, all of that was decided at a local level that she does not represent us.
So Kelly, in this ranked choice voting, although some of our people are now starting to refer to it as rigged choice voting, which I really love because I think that's a pretty good description. But so on the primary ballot, does it even list party affiliation on the primary ballot or on the general election ballot?
It lists the party that the candidate says that they choose to affiliate with, which means you could choose to affiliate with any party. Mm-hmm. And another interesting fact that we saw happen up here, Cleta, is when it comes to the general election, because parties aren't the ones determining who goes to the general election, the voters are the ones determining who goes. We had very few third-party candidates represented in the general election. The Libertarians, the Green Party, Independents, our Alaska Independent Party, the Constitution Party. As a point of comparison, in 2000, in our federal election, we had 6 third-party candidates on our general election ballot. We had one candidate running as an independent, but the Division of Elections listed him as the Democrat Party for our U.S. Senate candidate. So that would have been our 7th person. But in 2022, we only had one third-party candidate running on the ballot in the general election for federal election. And that's only because one of our other Republican candidates dropped off. He didn't actually make the top 4. He just slid in because somebody else dropped out. If that hadn't happened, we would have had 0 third-party candidates make it to the general election. And I think that this in part contributed to what we saw as the record low voter turnout in Alaska in all of history in 2022. The rest of the United States saw one of the highest voter turnouts it had in 2022, but we saw the lowest turnout in Alaska state history in last year's election. This was despite having a pretty contentious U.S. Senate race, mm-hmm. a U.S. House race when our incumbent had passed away after serving 49 years, so it was an open seat. We had 48 people run in that seat, so that seat was very, very contentious. We had a governor race last year, and we had a constitutional convention decision on the ballot. We had a lot of reasons for voters to turn out to vote, but we had the lowest voter turnout in state history. And I think part of it might be because we didn't have many third-party candidates on the ballot at all. So a whole section of Alaskans weren't even represented in the general election because their candidates, their parties weren't on the ballot. Whereas before, under a plurality system, the parties get to decide who they put forward. So Libertarians get to put forward their candidates. Alaska Independent Party gets to put forward its candidates. The Constitution Party gets to put forward its candidates. You don't have that right anymore. And so in the end, a lot of people were just naturally disenfranchised by not having their candidates represented in the general election.
Well, that's crazy. I mean, this whole system is just insane, it seems to me. But I want to go back to trying to understand. So you go to the primary and you vote for one person or you vote for multiples?
In the primary, you only get to vote for one person. And remember, you called it a rigged system, but it was like there was a plan. The Democrats didn't vote for their Democrat candidate. The Democrats voted for the Republican candidate who they wanted to see go forward.
Oh, right.
And so that's exactly what the Supreme Court was talking about in that Democrat Party versus Jones case, is they said the parties get to control their primaries because the last thing you would want is a whole bunch of Republicans deciding who the Democrat Party of California's candidate was in the general election. That wouldn't make much sense, would it? Well, that's exactly what happened in Alaska. The Democrats decided who the Republican Party's candidate was on the general election. They picked Lisa Murkowski. And so we had Kelly Chewbacca and Lisa Murkowski as Republican, quote unquote, candidates. We had a very lightly supported Democrat candidate who had less than 10% of the vote in the primary and I think got exactly 10% of the vote in the general. And then we had another very lightly supported Republican candidate who got on the ballot who happened to have a last name that was similar to my first name. His last name was Kelly. So I assume there was some name confusion there. That was your lineup in the top 4. But the Democrats are the ones who picked who our Republican candidate would be. And so the Republicans had no control over their ballot in the end of the day.
And so then they take the top four vote getters coming out of the primary, regardless of which political party they say they're affiliated. So then on the general election ballot are those top four, and you may have, so what did you have, three people who said that they were Republicans and one who said he was a Democrat? Is that the way that worked?
That's the way it worked. And then a voter can choose to pick their one candidate that they want. We call that bullet voting. Or you could pick your two favorite candidates and order them one and two. Or you could rank all four candidates in order of preference, one, two, three, four. Then what happened is those bottom two candidates, the Democrat and the fourth Republican who got a couple percentage points of votes, they dropped off. And the voters who ranked candidates under them, two, three, and four, their votes for Kelly Chewbacca and Lisa Murkowski moved up to me and Lisa Murkowski. And whoever got the most votes at the end of that tally won. Since more Democrats voted for Lisa Murkowski than me, Lisa Murkowski won.
And she wouldn't have even been on that ballot had it been.
Got it.
Well, you know, she lost the primary in 2010. And the only way she was able to be reelected then was with this massive write-in campaign that was... But at least that, you know, at least she had to run a campaign. At least they didn't. She had to go out and get people to write in her name. And at least, but this to me makes zero sense. So you're saying that some people would put one person that they wanted to vote for, and some people voted for two, and some for three, and some for all four, and ranked
them?
That's
correct. So if you voted, for example, for that fourth Republican, which a couple thousand people did, and you didn't rank anybody else, they call that ballot exhaustion. Your vote drops off, and it doesn't count in the runoff. Some people call this automatic voter runoff, but it really isn't. You see, in Georgia, when somebody doesn't reach 50%, they take those top two candidates, and then they have a runoff.
And you go back to the polls and you actually cast another vote.
Yes. And everybody has an equal chance to cast a second vote. Everybody knows that the runoff is between those two candidates. Some people will even tell you that they changed their vote based on how strong a candidate came out in the original election, or how a candidate has handled themselves in that last week or two. But you don't have that opportunity in this case. And a lot of people didn't even know what was happening. They don't even know that it's considered an instant runoff, so to speak. There was so much confusion around this process. I've heard stories of so many people who just opted out of not voting because they didn't understand this process or how it worked. That happened on the Republican side and the Democrat side. Just to give you an example, we target in campaigns what we call the super voters, the people who vote in four out of four elections. 100% of the time they vote. There were 19,000 hard Republican super voters that did not vote in 2022.
Oh my gracious.
Okay, this is in a state where if we have a really good election, 300,000 people vote. But it wasn't just Republican super voters that didn't vote. It was the same percentage of Democrat super voters who didn't vote. We had between 19 and 21% voter drop-off in all regions of the state, in every demographic, Republicans and Democrats. This was in coastal Alaska and in Rail Belt Alaska. This was among our Alaska natives, and this was among the people in the urban areas. This was everybody. It was as if everybody got the same memo, 20% of you don't show up at the polls this year. Why? And we have to ask that question. Why did Alaskans stop voting in 2022? We don't have a solid, empirically based reason for that yet. I'm working on gathering the money to conduct a poll for that we could actually ask all these people, why didn't you come to the polls? Why didn't you vote? We have speculation. You know, I've held some gatherings and some workshops, and a lot of the reasons I hear are it was because of ranked choice voting. It was because there were, you know, we had 75 candidates running for just three statewide offices, and it was up to each individual voter to screen them and know their background and their campaign platform. It's a virtually impossible task. Or it was voter confusion, or my candidate wasn't on the ballot, or there was so much discouragement from how election results went in 2020. We just don't trust the system, but we don't actually know. And until we can diagnose the problem, we can't get to the actual solution and help drive voter participation and voter turnout, which I think is really the greatest threat to election integrity in the system that I've heard so far. I did an audit on our division of elections in 2019 before everybody saw what I saw in 2020. I don't think there's any greater vulnerability to our elections than the people just saying, I'm not going to participate anymore. And we're just going to let the incumbents have it all. And we're going to run with it. But I'll tell you, Cleta, we call the lower 48 all of the states that are south of Alaska. And I'll read these articles in the lower 48 that talk about how great ranked choice voting was in Alaska because, quote, candidates of all parties won. But that's not the experience that we have up here in Alaska. The way we see it in Alaska is it's the incumbents who won. You see, when you have a system that just has this blank open general primary, and it's a free for all, and you have 75 candidates running for three statewide seats, that's not including our state house and our state senate seats and all the judges who ran. Our ballot was multiple pages long. 75 candidates means that the person who can run the most ads has an even greater advantage than in a normal plurality election. And so who has the ability to run the most ads? The person with the most money and the person with the most dark money. And so the people who ran the most ads by far were our incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
And voters who are tasked with having to get to know the backgrounds and skills and qualifications and campaign platforms of 75 individual candidates throw their hands up in the air and just say, well, whose ads do I see the most? And so who won? In the U.S. Senate, the incumbent won. In the U.S. House, the incumbent won. The person who won the special election to fill in for our vacant congressman is the person who won the general election. And who won our governor race? The incumbent won. Do we really want a system that is so geared towards weighting favorably towards the incumbents that grassroots candidates, third-party candidates, Mr. Smith goes to Washington candidates don't have a chance? Do we really want that system? That's the question I think we have to ask ourselves when we realize ranked choice voting isn't just in Alaska and Maine. It's already being used in 31 states.
That's
and 14 states are currently looking to implement or expand it. And if this is a system that is weighted so favorably towards incumbents, what incentive is there for our political leaders and those in charge to move away from the system and keep us with the election system that America was raised on and developed on, which ultimately was a grassroots system, right? The system that got us out from under the leadership of King George.
Well, that's really true. I mean, I think one of the things you said that's really important and bears repeating, and that is that the greatest threat to our republic is people losing faith and losing confidence in the election system and then just saying, I'm not going to participate. And I find that really terribly discouraging. Has there been any conversation from the Democratic Party? I mean, are they concerned about the drop in turnout? They always are accusing Republicans of suppressing turnout and don't want the suppressing the vote. I'm just wondering if they are up in arms about this dramatic drop-off in voting, even among the Democrats. Are they concerned about that?
Yeah, so Cleta, at preservedemocracy.com, this organization that I've started, we are focusing on voter turnout, the root problem behind the problem. And in focusing on that, I've been fascinated to find how many Democrats across America are talking about the voter suppression effect that this ranked choice voting system has. I'm not sure that the people who are supporting ranked choice voting understand that or that that's their intent. But when that is the effect, we all need to really open our eyes and understand if that's what we're advocating for, is that really what we want to usher in? So, for example, the head of the New York NAACP has been very vocal and bold about saying ranked choice voting causes voter suppression and voter suppression of vulnerable voting demographic groups of people. And so she's seeing that up in New York. I've been interested to see that the ACLU has testified about it as well, saying ranked choice voting causes at least 8% voter suppression in non-presidential campaigns. So our election years, when we see lower voter turnout anyway, we're seeing an even greater effect on people not turning out to vote, which is what 2022 was here for us in Alaska. Interested to see that Gavin Newsom, governor of California, vetoed a bill to make ranked choice voting mandated statewide in California because of his concerns about how it affects voter turnout. And so you see these prominent Democrats and these prominent Democrat groups saying, it actually does have an effect on voter suppression. And so for that reason, they're being very cautious and reluctant about ranked choice voting. And I think that that's encouraging. If there's an issue that Democrats and Republicans can actually unite around in this time, it's an issue about making sure that we're actually increasing voter turnout and voter participation. And we want to stop changes to our election system, reengineering of election processes and systems that would actually cause depressions in voting, even if they're unintentional. The last thing we all want is for fewer people to turn out to vote.
That's right. That is, to me, that's the biggest challenge. It's one of the reasons I do, one of the reasons I do what I do, because I want people to be able to have confidence in the elections, because the Declaration of Independence says, and people who've listened to my podcast for a while know that I kind of am a broken record on this, but I always go back to the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence says that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And the way that we as Americans give and withdraw consent to those who govern us is through elections. And I don't want a situation, I don't think any of us believe that our republic can survive if those who are elected, the incumbents, as you say, put themselves beyond the reach of the citizenry. And I don't really care what political party it is. It's just, I think we all want to be sure that if we as citizens disagree with the policies of those who are in power, we have to believe that we have the ability and we have it within our power to withdraw consent and to replace them. And what you're describing is something that to me is a real threat to that system of being able to give and withdraw the consent of the governed being us.
You're absolutely right. This is the foundation of our constitutional republic, that there is this democracy component of it. That's why we're counted among the democracies of the world, the consent of the governed selecting the elected representatives. But what happens when we're not really selecting them? What happens when the systems, the structures, the policies, the processes are so wired that there's sort of this pretend or this kabuki theater, if you will, that, oh yes, the people decided it, but really the people didn't decide it. When you start reading the studies and the literature out there on ranked choice voting, it's all a little bit of a shell game. You know, there's this one study that was done that says the whole point of it is that they advertise this as, well, you know, then ultimately with the backup votes, the person selected has 50% of the votes, but they analyzed four elections and with all of the ballot exhaustion, the person who ultimately was elected is elected with between 45 to 46% of the vote, never crossing 46%. They claim it's 50% of the ballots, but it's just 50% of the remaining ballots. Mm. Well, on round one, somebody had 46% of the total votes. You just ultimately get to a different person being elected because of how you decide to reallocate the votes. And the conclusion of this election journal article, which is an academic journal, not particularly favorable to conservative opinions, was we all need to be very careful if we're going to decide to start counting votes differently so we can come to a different outcome that actually doesn't serve a better purpose. It's not 50% of the votes. It doesn't better represent the elected public. It actually is just leading to things like voter drop-off and exhausted ballots and disenfranchised voters. And it engineers us towards a different outcome that benefits a certain group of people. And to your point, it isn't the consent of the governed. There's another study that shows the longer you have ranked choice voting in place, the fewer and fewer and fewer voters participate. You just increase the voter suppression over time. These are all things I think we really need to be concerned about. That's why we're focusing on things like get out the vote and voter registration and making sure that we can get to that root problem. I don't know how long ranked choice voting is going to be in effect in Alaska, but what I don't want to see is Alaskans' voices to be silenced. That's one of the reasons why I jumped into the race is up here in Alaska, I can't even tell you how many people on all sides of the political spectrum feel ignored and forgotten and silenced. You know, in those second place ballots that got picked up, you know, as the Democrats and stuff dropped off, I picked up almost a third of Democrats' second place ballots, Cleta.
Wow.
It's not just Republicans who feel like their federal representatives aren't listening to them and are ignoring them. Another word that is commonly used is we feel exploited by the people in Washington, D.C. Our resources, our fish, our oil, everything. We're just being turned into a big national park, and the people who are suffering are the families and the hard workers out here in Alaska who are really struggling. You know, in the lower 48, you might get berries and canned goods and eat something that you hunted for fun. But up here, we have to live off the land because our economy is suffering that badly. But who's making those policies for us? And it's the people in Washington, D.C. who say that they're for us, but really they're against us. So then it really broke my heart to see that the same people who I'd been talking to for nearly 600 days on a campaign trail chose to mute their own voices when it came time to the election. And we had the lowest voter turnout in state history. They really feel silenced and ignored and forgotten, so much so that they really didn't feel their vote even counted.
Well, that is heartbreaking, and it's a real threat to our country as a whole, our very constitutional structure. And what you're describing reminds me, a number of years ago, I met with some people from Mexico who had come, they were an opposition party, and they had come to the United States. They came to Washington. I don't even remember now how it is that I was connected with them, but to meet with them because, and honestly, after they described their campaign finance system and their election system, I finally said, I don't know, this whole thing is designed to just protect the people in power. And then there was a change. And then there was, you know, I don't even remember now, maybe you know more about it than I do, but there was a time after that when I remember reading that there had been a real change and that the system had been reformed to allow for real competition and the Reform Party and the existing party to duke it out. And then I've been hearing that there are proposed changes on the horizon to change it back. And some of what you're describing reminds me of that, you know, a march toward just fewer and fewer people making the decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There was just an article written about this, these devastating changes that are happening with Mexico, our border country for us, and we're very influenced by everything that happens there. And their culture and their political system will absolutely influence ours as well. You're right. They had a model election system, a model election integrity system. And now the people in charge are making it so that only their party can stay in charge. And the ability for competing parties, or what I would call even like a check and balance, I think it's really healthy to have a check and balance of diversity of perspectives in our government to represent all the people. And they're just ensuring that they snuff out those voices and that they hold on to power. And I really see that danger and that threat is coming into America, where we're losing the threads of what we see our founders writing about. You know, there's a reason why freedom of speech and freedom of assembly and freedom of petition are protected first and foremost. The priority of the First Amendment is preeminent in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights for a reason. And that is being snuffed out and squashed in so many ways in our country right now. But in politics and the election system especially, I think it's extremely dangerous. When I tell you that our ballot was dominated by Republicans and Democrats, and these other views and perspectives weren't represented at all, I think that's very alarming. And we want to make sure that our country continues to be a place of robust political dialogue and engagement and debate so that we sharpen each other and that we represent all the people. And I think that we become better representatives and political leaders when we have those people writing us and challenging us. And one of the things that I would bring up when I was on the campaign trail, because there'd be tense arguments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, listen, do you think the same things that you thought when you were in elementary school? Of course, everybody says no. And I said, is that because you may have encountered somebody who thought differently from you and may have even offended you with what they thought? But then you think about it a little bit and you get challenged by the diversity of people around you and you become a better person. Don't we want to embrace and engage differences of opinion? Well, if it gets snuffed out by the people in charge and kind of an authoritarian government leadership style, only the people in charge can be the people in charge. And they only get to pick who's going to be in charge next. That is not the system that our country is built on. That's not what we read in the founding documents. And I think we want to go back and preserve that. That is the fundamental component, the essence of election integrity. And that's what we're fighting for.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've had an interesting experience in 2022. So tell us what you're doing. Tell us about your organization and what you and others are trying to do to restore a real robust dialogue, a political debate, and opportunities in Alaska. What are you doing?
I'm very excited about the initiatives we have underway right now. So you all can check out what we're doing and keep up with us at preservedemocracy.com. The main initiative we have on the ground right now is a major get out the vote effort. We have our Anchorage Assembly races. Anchorage is about half the population of the state of Alaska. So I figure if we can put some methods in place that work to mobilize Anchorage to vote in these assembly races, and we know that they work, then we'll know what we can do in 2024 to get out the vote as well. So you can help us with that if you want to donate at preservedemocracy.com. It would really help. Another thing we want to do is that poll I told you about. We've got to figure out why Alaska stopped voting in 2022, because I imagine that this is going to be why a lot of people stop voting across America as these election reform efforts continue to move forward.
Reform, as the left defines reform.
You and I have been partnering with these things together, Cleta, but maybe a lot of your audience isn't aware that the same thing they've tried in Alaska has been proposed in U.S. Congress twice already,
right,
to become mandated across all 50 states for all U.S. House and Senate races. So it could be that the entire U.S. election system is about to change. I would like to use this poll. A lot of the things I'm hearing is, you know, these changes are coming because it, quote, worked so well in Alaska. I'd like to use this poll to show why it didn't work. We need to have the evidence from Alaskans' mouths of what actually happened and then get that into the hands of decision makers across the U.S. And then that's the third thing. I've already been working with leaders and decision makers in Arizona and Nevada and Georgia and Virginia. These are just some of the places that are looking to implement ranked choice. And they're calling up here saying, hey, could you tell us what happened? How much did it cost? How long did it take? What were the effects? I've already talked to you about some of those details. But as an example, it took us the longest amount of time in all of the states to count our votes last year, 2.5 weeks. We did not know until Thanksgiving who won the election.
That's terrible.
So when we have the smallest population, that's an example of ranked choice. And also, it cost us as much to implement ranked choice in one election cycle as it cost to overhaul our entire election system when I was commissioner. We got a brand new election system statewide and got all new machines, everything, for the exact same amount it cost to implement ranked choice. So that's how expensive this whole system is. And we're going to have to go through all the education again next year. Those are just some facts for people who are wanting to know what are some of the facts behind ranked choice about what we're getting into. So we're helping other states. Those are the things we're working on. Polls, get out the vote, voter registration, and helping other states at preservedemocracy.com.
So are you trying to, is there an effort to try to change and move away from ranked choice voting? Is that a possibility, or are you stuck with it?
Yes. So we have a couple of things in Alaska that are real promising for repealing ranked choice voting. Alaskans for Honest Elections has a petition initiative to repeal ranked choice voting. That's a large uphill battle. We've got to get 22,000 signatures and get it on the ballot and actually pass it. There's also a court case pending in the Ninth Circuit called Smith v. Helzer that could overturn ranked choice voting. So that's incredibly promising. And then our legislature in Juneau is considering overturning it. Keep in mind, some of those legislators only got elected because of ranked choice voting. So that goes back to the incumbents having a vested interest in this. But those are both at the ballot level, at the legislative level, and at the court level, three opportunities to overturn ranked choice. I can tell you, 53% of Alaskans have been polled and saying that they don't like ranked choice and they want to overturn it. I think it's just a matter of time, but we are already being bombarded with hundreds of thousands of dollars in ads saying that we love ranked choice voting. And so there's a campaign already afoot to keep us informed that how much we want to keep it. It's going to be a battle if we're going to get rid of it.
So when you mentioned this particular litigation in the Ninth Circuit, do you have any further details about that case, where it came from, or anything about it?
Yes. So when they passed the ballot measure, they put four things together with it: the ranked choice voting, the open primaries, our governor race, and then increased disclosures about dark money so that they could say it was about dark money.
Right, right.
And our ballots and measures are only supposed to have one issue in it at a time.
I'm just going to say there's a single subject rule, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And that was challenged in our court system. And our Alaska Supreme Court said, no, the four measures rise together, they fall together. So they're tied together. And so the dark money provision has been challenged in federal court, saying it's a violation of the First Amendment because it has overdisclosure provisions that chill free speech and make it burdensome on political speech. Of course, political speech is protected, that people aren't going to want to give as much as they normally would give if you didn't have these overdisclosure requirements. And of course, That's a fairly compelling argument. And so I imagine that that's going to be successful in the Ninth Circuit. Of course, if it isn't, it'll be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. That seems to be pretty protective of the Bill of Rights at this time. That's what I've noticed. You know, the Second Amendment isn't a second-class right, as an example of one of the things they've said recently. So I imagine either way, this particular court case will prevail in the interest of throwing out the dark money provision. Well, since the Supreme Court of Alaska said they rise together, they fall together, if the dark money provision falls, then the ranked choice voting provision and the other provisions, open primaries, et cetera, will have to fall. And I suspect that would be why we're seeing all the ads telling us how much we love ranked choice, because if the court case gets thrown out, then we'll see a ballot initiative trying to get us to adopt ranked choice voting again. Either way, the moral of the story is ranked choice voting battle is on in Alaska, either to get it thrown out or to get us to reenact it, because this is, you know, ground zero for ranked choice voting. If they lose Alaska and we start repealing it, then that'll send a signal across all of the states saying maybe ranked choice voting didn't go over so well in Alaska and we shouldn't be moving forward with it. And so I think you're going to see this play out for a while up here, and we could use your help. So we're at preservedemocracy.com if you want to join the fight.
Well, I think it's really a fight worth fighting. What you're doing, what you've been through, it's just really, I just thought it would be really important to hear from someone who's been actually engaged and has dealt with ranked choice voting, rigged choice voting, because most people don't know anything about it. We've had a couple of podcast episodes about it, but not from people who've actually lived through it. And the fact that you've lived through it, you know what the problems are. I'm particularly concerned about this dramatic drop in voter turnout. And it just seems to me that if something is that confusing, it's hard enough to get people to vote, to study the candidates and all. But you start making it so difficult and complicated, I can see why a lot of people would just throw up their hands and say, you know, I'm not even going to bother. So, I really, really appreciate all that you do, Kelly, and you're a great conservative, you're a great patriot, and you've served your country and you're serving your state. And so I urge people to do what you ask them to do. And tell us again where it is that they should come.
We're at preservedemocracy.com, and we could use your help in this Get Out the Vote effort and for funding a poll. We'll let you know the results when it's done. And Cleta, thanks for all that you do, and thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Kelly. And that concludes this episode. We hope that you will visit our website. Visit our website at whoscounting.us. Please share this episode and subscribe to the podcast. We're trying to tell America about how elections ought to be run. And we are in a death battle with those who have many more millions and billions of dollars. But we have patriots across the country, just like our wonderful friend, Kelly Shabaka in Alaska. And with that, we'll say goodnight and we'll see you again next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.